recently, a Siena poll was conducted and found that the race for county executive here in Erie County between Democrat Mark Poloncarz and the Republican Chris Collins is in a dead heat. In turn, the Collins camp is refuting those figures, citing their own poll. What do we know about the poll that the Collins camp has conducted? The Siena poll, obviously a very respected organization, but what do we know about the Collins poll?
We know nothing about that poll except for what they tell us, because they have refused to release any of its parameters, the questions asked, the sample, a description of the sample the people that they polled, or even the numbers that they garnered, except perhaps through the site of a fellow named Joe Aluzzi, who tends to support those people who advertise on his political website. He has the numbers, but the Collins campaign sort of pretends that they don't have to release them. Although, in fact, state election law says if you refer to a poll, internal or independent or whatever, in support of your candidate or in order to diminish the candidacy of your opponent, you must, within 48 hours, file it with the Board of Elections.
Is there a legal issue here? Is someone taking up, let's say, the...
No, probably no one is going to take up this legal issue because it is sort of a garden variety a violation of campaign election law. You'd have to make that argument. It's very difficult to make that argument, and it's not the sanctions at the end are not really worth it. It's a small point, but the larger point is that we don't know anything about this poll, this internal poll that the Republicans say shows Chris Collins with a commanding lead over Poloncarz. What we do know is that the Siena poll shows the race practically in a dead heat, which seems to coincide with the results found by a couple of more partisan Democratic polls that were released in the last couple of months.
There was a recent debate between the two candidates, and Collins, of course, claiming that he has such a commanding lead in the race, but with these poll results coming out, how did that affect the debate?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think in the debate, both candidates performed fairly well. In a couple of junctures, Collins was a little bit edgier than Poloncarz. Poloncarz was pretty calm, and his delivery was solid all the way through. And Collins did well, too. I think it really was a draw in that regard. They both landed their punches. They both delivered their messages. They both spoke to their bases, really. What's interesting about that, though, I think it's possible that Collins needed to do a little bit more than that. His campaign, in the last couple of weeks especially, and absolutely since the Siena poll came out, their message has been that Poloncarz is desperate, that he has no support, that there's no money, that there's no manpower, that he will do anything to get elected. They are trying to diminish his candidacy. But he didn't look desperate on Wednesday night. Poloncarz looked good. The people who support him, or who are inclined to support him, will think, This guy sounds pretty good. Those who support Collins will think, this guy sounds, like the guy Collins says he is. So I think Collins needed to do a little bit more. He needed to reinforce that message that Poloncarz is desperate, and I don't think he accomplished that.
And you, in your recent column, have mentioned that this perception of Poloncarz as a desperate and unfunded candidate, in fact, has been turned on its head in a sense. He's become sort of a unifying force in a fractured Democratic Party locally. He's been gaining support from disparate elements of the party as well as some funding.
I think to some degree that's true. And I think it's truer now because these polls show, as Election Day grows near, these polls are showing the race sort of rather tight, tighter than maybe some people expected it would be. So you have, for example, the Steve Pigeon wing of the party is now in conference with Chairman Len Lenihan. They're traditionally enemies, but they are working together on the Poloncarz campaign. In fact, just about every wing of the Democratic Party, except for Byron Brown's wing, the Mayor Byron Brown's wing, seems to be behind Poloncarz's candidacy to some degree or another.
If we can see Poloncarz as somewhat that unifying factor in the Democratic Party, how does the Republican Party locally view Collins? Does he unify the party? Are they unified behind him?
I think there are some stray elements of the Republican Party that do not support Collins. Not so much in Erie County, but let's say up in Niagara County. I think, for example, if I may name names, I think Senator George Maziarz is not a particular fan of Collins. That doesn't mean he's not going to support him or endorse him, but he may not help him. But generally speaking, I think the Republican Party is pretty well rallied around Chris Collins. He's their candidate. He's the incumbent. he's a big name and a big money raiser. So I think they have to be. That said, there are always some dissenting voices, and there are in the local Republican Party too, but you're not going to hear them. The Republicans, if they're good at one thing, it's at holding the party line.
Changing our focus a bit to just outside of City Hall, protesters have been gathering in Niagara Square as part of a movement that's aligned with Occupy Wall Street. What exactly is the focus of the Occupy Buffalo effort?
I think it's the same as the focus of this Occupy movement that is kind of sweeping cities across the country in alignment with the Occupy Wall Street movement, which is a little over a month old now. I'm sure most folks know that about a month ago, a park in the financial district of Manhattan was occupied by demonstrators. Their numbers have ranged from hundreds to thousands, depending upon the day. Their slogan is, "We are the 99%," as opposed to the 1% that controls 50% of the nation's wealth. And since then, since that movement has sort of burgeoned out into other cities across the country, including Buffalo, which I think is an encouraging sign that we are not this backwater left behind by, you know, the economy and by the currents of time, that we are, in fact, a vibrant and now city. We have our own Occupy movement. It's in Niagara Square. They had their second General Assembly on October 8th. They did not intend to kick off their occupation of Niagara Square until October 15th. However, the weather was so balmy that a group of them decided to start then and now. A crew of between 20 and 40 people have been there every day since, day and night, you know, chanting and holding signs and marching and sleeping.
Is Wall Street or even the local financial industry just too large to be influenced by this, what would be a relatively small movement, even though it may include thousands of people?
That's interesting to say, and that goes to the question of the efficacy of street-level protest, especially if you have the sort of maybe broad and engaging message, the 99% versus the 1%, but maybe not a particular list of demands or, you know, an action plan. But what it does, of course, is it raises the dialogue. And I've been down in Niagara Square quite often in the last week. And what struck me, what surprises me, is in a place like Niagara Square, there's not a great deal of pedestrian traffic. So you really sort of measure how much sympathy you're getting from how many cars are honking their horns as they see you, you know, as they honk their horns in solidarity. And there's a lot of horn honking going on in Niagara Square. And there's a lot of horn honking by, say, firefighters and police and other municipal workers and union people. And it's really, I think it's a quite astonishing outpouring of support. It's a resonant message. The majority of the country does not seem to have any control over our economy, over our political system. What effect does that have? What does this grow into? Who knows? But at least it's creating a dialogue.
Well, that leads directly into the next question, and that is, what lies ahead for Occupy Buffalo? Where does it go from here?
Harsher weather, for sure. Harsher weather. They've been blessed in the last week, but this past weekend, things are meant to turn on them, and we'll see how. I think they're a pretty stalwart group, though.
It'll be interesting to see. Now, the National Preservation Conference is being held in Buffalo this week. This would seem to be an ideal opportunity to showcase some of Buffalo's architectural gems. Is this going to benefit the city?
Sure. You know, of course it will. You've got a couple of thousand people coming in with the specific purpose of talking about preservation and enjoying the wealth of historic architecture we have. Not just architecture, but spaces, public spaces like Niagara Square. In addition to, you know, the sort of gems that everyone knows about, the be doing events at the Statler, for example, and I'm sure they'll be looking at Rocco Termini's ongoing renovation of the Lafayette Hotel. They'll be going out to the Richardson Towers, et cetera. And, of course, they'll be touring our grain elevators, you know, going down the Buffalo River on boats. I think there'll also be an opportunity for us as Buffalonians and Western New Yorkers to look at some of the great opportunities for rehabilitation and reuse of vacant buildings or underused buildings. For example, the DL&W terminal. People have been talking for years about how that might be reused. And the NFTA is more open than ever to reuse at least of the second floor. So buildings like that, I think, will be on the table. And I think there'll be a lot of support as a result of this influx of interested visitors to talk about these things and maybe even to kickstart them a little bit.
You mentioned that Louis Grachos from the Albright Knox has an idea for the DL&W building. What is that idea?
Yes. Almost since the day he arrived in Buffalo, Louis Grachos has been looking at ways the Albright Knox might either expand or create some sort of satellite gallery. And for a couple of years, he's been sort of quietly working on the idea that the DL&W terminal, the second floor, might be converted into a space that could be programmed by multiple arts organizations. The Albright Knox would take the lead, I believe, but other smaller arts organizations would be partners in it as well. I think if you're familiar with the terminal, it's a gorgeous and long building with a huge, huge patio that overlooks the Buffalo River and grain elevators. It's just a tremendous space. Although it is dark and closed in now, originally it had skylights. It would be very much like the Musée d'Orsay in Paris. It could really be a stunning, stunning addition to our cultural landscape.
And what a beautiful gem downtown to make that happen.
And on the waterfront, adjacent to the Inner Harbor development to Canal Side. It would really, and right across the street from the hockey arena.
Well, this has been great. Thank you so much, Jeff.
My pleasure. Thank you.